Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Melanie, are we now deep in the second week of...
Shut up.
This is the second Sunday of Lent.
Second Sunday recording. Of Lent.
Yep. Yes. So just to continue my silly discussion from last week. So lots to talk about. So let's get right into it. Did we talk about the furniture before? Or do I have to introduce what I'm about to talk about?
I have no idea.
Okay. So as part of our long saga last fall of our house disaster, the water dragon attack, as the girls put it, when we had the water damage, we were homeless for 3 months. We had all this work had to be done in our home. Part of that was also we had to replace our living room furniture. Not because it was directly damaged by the water. That would have been nice. Insurance would have paid for that. But because it was very old. Like the couch was 12 years old.
13.
13 years old. And the chair was 16 years old. Because we got it just before Bella was born.
Yeah.
So... And they had seen all that wear and tear of five kids.
we did talk about this because I remember saying that, like, they weren't damaged, but they were not worth salvaging. They weren't worth storing.
Well, yes. And then, right. And in the midst of all of the hullabaloo of the tearing the house apart, they just got inundated with dust and mold and all kinds of stuff. And they were all broken down anyway. So we ended up having to buy new furniture, which we did at the end of last November, Thanksgiving weekend, right?
Thanksgiving weekend.
And we picked out what we wanted. We ordered it. And they said, 8 to 10 weeks, which seemed like a long time then. Yeah, around. Although, actually, the sales lady said the couch looks like it could be in right after Christmas. So call the week after Christmas. So early January is when I started calling. And they would tell me, it's going to be at least a few more weeks. So finally, 2 weeks ago, they said, it was even less than that. It was I called and they said, the couch is here. Well, again, like a week or a half before that, they were like, it's going to be another 3 weeks. So I'm like, can you deliver the couch and the ottoman? Because the ottoman was here. Oh, sure, we can do that. But the chair is going to be, at least to the 20th. And so, okay, so the next opening was Wednesday, this past Wednesday, and then I get a call the next day. The chair is here, and we can deliver it. Oh, great. Can you have them send it along with the couch and the ottoman? Because those are already coming on Wednesday. Oh, no, the truck's already been packed, so that'll have to come on Thursday. Okay.
And somebody later realized that was stupid and just put it on the truck.
Yes, and so... Wednesday morning, the guys come in, the truck shows up, the guys carry it in. 10 minutes later, they carry out the old crappy stuff, the old couch, the old chair, good riddance, goodbye. And in come the new furniture. And it was so nice.
So very nice.
Should mention that the day before, we had told the kids, the three younger kids, make sure that you go through the couch, that there are no toys, books, anything of value still in the cushions deep down in the bowels of this couch in the depths below.
Right. The interior lining had been ripped apart years ago.
Yeah.
And so lots of stuff was in the habit of falling down into the depths of the couch.
So, and so Ben says, can I use my knife to tear it open so that we can get in there easier? And you said, sure.
I was not asked about the knife.
I thought
he asked you about
the knife. Oh, maybe he asked me, I guess. So, sure, but I don't want you tearing the couch to bits and making a mess. Oh, no, we won't do that. I come out. It looks like a velociraptor has been at it.
It has slash marks.
They slashed the couch cushions.
They were supposed to be digging in the bottom of the couch, but somehow they decided to slash the back of the couch.
Yeah, I know who that was responsible for that one. Probably the same child who cut the cushion of the recliner several years ago.
Evidently, it was a team effort.
The slasher gang.
Yes.
No harm, no foul. I mean, I just would rather not have slashed it to bits, you know, just out of propriety's sake. We do not slash furniture up in the house, you know, because there can be misunderstandings about what's going and what isn't. Luckily, it all went the next day, and the new couches, and there's the rules: no food in the living room. Never mind while sitting on the furniture. No food in the living room. No blades. No scissors. No nothing. We'll see how long that lasts. Gosh,
probably not very.
Anyway, it's just nice to sit in my living room for the first time in 6 months. So it took over 3 months to get the furniture. So anyway, that's there. So excited. We now can say prayers together as a family in the living room again. We actually really need another chair in there.
There's not room for another chair in there.
I know. It's just, man, it needs more space to sit. So that was Wednesday. And then this weekend, we had a scout camping trip. And this was just for the boys. So Ben's troop. And then I'm the den leader for Anthony's den of, some places they call it second year Weeblos, and other places they call it Arrow of Light. We call it Arrow of Light. I didn't realize that there was some people had the different terminology. So anyway, it's the rank right before they go from Cub Scouts to Boy Scouts. And as part of that rank progression, they are supposed to go on a camp out with a Boy Scout troop. So that's what this weekend is. So my den of seven, well, my den has seven boys, eight boys, actually, technically, but two of them didn't come at all. And we were camping. We were in a cabin at this scout camp, Camp Squanto, and the Boy Scout troop was in another cabin at this camp. And we went down Friday night, and there was like one dad and his son in my den who was staying over Friday night, and then they were leaving on Saturday, but then all the rest were coming on Saturday and staying overnight to Sunday. We were the only ones who were staying from, you know, Friday night and Saturday night. So I had to do all the food shopping, had to get all the food for them, which is hard because, you know, seven boys, seven dads, got to make sure you have enough. You don't want to run out of food. So that was, and I haven't really done that part of it very often. So I overbought, which is the normal thing. And then just a couple of things. The weather was supposed to be rainy, like really rainy on Saturday. So I was afraid we'd end up being stuck indoors with a bunch of 11-year-old boys. I was really concerned about that. Like, what are we going to do? Turned out there was rain, but it was off and on. It was heavy at times, but they were able to get out and run around and stuff. So that was good. And then overnight, it snowed and was wicked windy. It was windy here, too, right?
Super windy. It sounded like freight train going down the street.
Yeah. So, and it was windy there in the forest. This scout camp is deep in the Miles Standish State Forest in Plymouth, Mass. And it is remote, and it was wild, the wind in the trees. So they we had that weather, and then, So one thing I wanted to bring up was something that's kind of disturbing that happened, which is some bullying that involved our sons. So we've mentioned before that Ben has anxiety. A lot of kids in the last couple of years have been diagnosed with it. I have at least three or four of the boys in my den I've been told they've been diagnosed with anxiety disorders. So it's a fairly common thing. And it was tough when he first started experiencing it really bad that he couldn't even get him to Scouts. And so getting him to be able to be comfortable at Scouts and enjoy it has been a journey. And it hasn't always been an easy one. And he doesn't always get to go on things. And sometimes it's too much to go, and we don't do event activities or whatever because of it. But he's been going. Well, one point we were over with the Boy Scout troop, and Ben comes out of this big bunk room where the boys have been sleeping, and he's upset and crying. And long story short, the boys in that room were told not to be playing with the football, throwing the football around indoors. When they were still were doing it, Ben told them not to and then told the senior patrol leader. The senior patrol leader called Ben a tattletale, but then immediately regretted it and apologized. But that made Ben less desirable to tell others that the kids were breaking the rules. So he decided to enforce the rule himself and went to one of the boys' beds and took the ball away from them. That boy got angry at Ben touching his stuff and took Ben's beloved Grogu pillow and his Grogu doll from him. This one particular boy is new and has apparently, according to other boys that I've talked to, has formed a clique of older boys that are excluding some of the younger boys, including the kids in my den. I've heard from the boys in my den independently that this is going on. And so I was upset, not surprisingly. And the scout leaders, the troop leaders, took it seriously, but couldn't do much because of the confusion. I only got the whole story out over time through a number of conversations. So we need to have a leadership meeting where we need to discuss this at length. But cliques in Boy Scouts are bad. Bullying is forbidden. This is something all adult leaders in Scouts have to take youth protection training and get recertified every 2 years. And this is a huge part of that. Bullying has no place. Bullying is not a way for boys to grow up and become men. It is not acceptable. It's not a rite of passage. I was bullied as a kid. I don't like it. And I don't want my sons to experience it. And frankly, it will set him, both of them, back so that they don't want to do scouts. And that's not good for the troop. And it's not good for us, because a bullying clique in a troop is a death sentence for a troop. It'll drive kids away. So it really was upsetting to me. The retaliation, and we've already talked to Ben, he should not have taken the ball from them. He shouldn't have touched the stuff. He should have gone to an adult and said something. He knows that now and he understands, but these other boys who are calling him names, they call him like fat boy and other stuff like that. It's really upsetting to me. So, I should probably stop there before I go on too long. The other thing was Anthony also got subject to a little bit of bullying separately when all the boys, the senior patrol leader, took all the boys on a hike. And Anthony had Lyme disease a few years ago, right?
When he was like five?
When he was like five. But I think one of the lingering effects is he sometimes gets pain in his legs, in his joints and his legs.
Right.
Do you think that's connected?
Possibly.
So when we go for hikes and as a family, we have to be, sure that he's not falling back. He doesn't complain. He just falls behind and, slows down.
He complains to me, but
okay. So,
I get an earful.
Yeah. So they were hiking, just the boys. It was an opportunity for the boys to go do a thing together with the leadership of the senior patrol leader. And he apparently was falling behind, and the senior patrol leader and some of the other boys were calling him, lazy and slow, and he's wandering off. He was just tired and in pain. And so the senior patrol leader called him a curse word, which apparently is, I won't go into it, but it was a curse word that is a bad one. It starts with "you little" and ends with the curse word. And he came back all upset, and one of the other Cub Scouts told me what had been done and said. And so I told the senior patrol leader that, if he's wandering off, then you tell him not to wander off, and you talk to the other adults about it. You do not berate. You do not curse at. You do not yell at. That is not leadership. Now, the senior patrol leader is kind of young, and he's the oldest boy in the troop, but it's a young troop. So he's still learning, and that's fine. I cut him the slack, but it is, again, not acceptable to yell at and make boys cry. And this is a thing I feel strongly that this troop needs to deal with this, or you're going to kill the troop. So I texted you about it.
Right.
And you told the girls about it, Bella and Sophie.
Well, I figured they would have to hear about it eventually.
They would hear about it, yeah.
They'd hear about the fallout anyway.
Yes.
They were up in arms like, I wish we were there. We would tell those boys what for.
Well, that's the great thing is those girls would have set things straight. Certainly. I mean, Bella is with righteous anger, and Sophie would just menace.
Yeah. I suspect if the girls were there, that this would not have gone on as long.
Would not
have happened at all.
Yeah. So, yeah. Right. Yeah. So, that's just the bullying is so toxic, and I just feel strongly about it. I just hate bullying. As someone who has been bullied as a kid, in some of it very specifically for my weight, but for other, you know, just or being small, I was also a small kid, and I just hate it. I hate when a kid takes advantage of you because you are ostracized or whatever. And some of the other Cub Scouts were also a little overtired, but they had started to get emotional, upset about things. So, yeah, we need to fix that. Anyway, other stuff that happened over the weekend. The kids were all in bunk beds, the kids and the dads.
Uh-huh.
So Anthony had picked a top bunk because he loves the top. All the boys love top bunks. They were all in top bunks. So apparently Saturday night, as Anthony had already gone to bed and the dads were all going to bed. And as a leader, I was in another. It's not another room like behind a door. It's just around a corner. And I was already laying down. I think I was asleep probably already. Anthony fell out of the bunk bed. It's 6 feet to a concrete floor. So he fell.
Lucky he didn't crack his head open.
No kidding. It was just it was like a loud thunk, they said. And they came running over. You okay? You okay? He just kind of pops up, doesn't really say much, and climbs up into a different bed, which was like one of the dads had put all of his gear in it. And so he's laying on top of this dad's gear and went back to sleep. And the dad, when Anthony woke up this morning, the dad was like, "Hey, you okay, buddy? That was a rough fall." And Anthony just looks confused. Like, what are you talking about? He had no memory of falling out of this bunk bed 6 feet to a concrete floor. That kid is a solid sleeper.
Yeah.
He's always been a solid sleeper.
You know, yeah, all of our kids, at least the middle three, they don't remember when they wake up in the middle of the night.
No, they don't. And sometimes they're like it. They've had when they were little, like dramatic wake ups. But like then you talk about it the next day, and they're like, "What? I have no idea what you're talking about." Oh man. So that was that. And then this morning, as we're packing up, it was really cold, and it was the weirdest thing. So I packed up our van at our cabin, then drove over to the other cabin to pick up Ben. And I'd left the van. The van was off, but I left the hazards on because you're supposed to have the hazards on when you're driving around the camp. And when I came back to the van, it wouldn't start. The battery was dead. But I had already started it and driven it. Like I hadn't driven it all weekend, but I had driven it down to the cabin. And then I'm like, the other dad, Adam, was there loading up his truck. And I asked Adam if he could give me a jump. He's like, sure. And he goes to start, and his wouldn't start, which was weird. Until he got out of the truck, and he has a remote starter. When he hit that on this key fob, then it started. It was weird.
Very strange.
And then we jumped the car with our wholly inadequate, I was told by the auto mechanic Cubmaster, that the jumper cables in the van were wholly inadequate to jumpstart a van. these are for like a golf cart, dude, or a subcompact. You need get better cables. So I did get, I actually ordered some new cables today.
Oh, good.
So that was good. And then the only other thing is like, I was talking about like buying the food, ton of leftover food. So which I tried to give as much of it as away to the other dads as I could, but there's still a lot of leftovers. So we had muffins and bread and milk.
That's pretty much what our kids ate, was the leftovers today.
Yeah. There was an orange juice and then some other like hot dogs and stuff I stuffed in the freezer. And some of the stuff I'll just, like the hot cocoa and stuff, I'll grab the next time we do a camping trip. I'll just bring that on the camping trip. So that'll be fine. So how was your weekend?
It was good. We had a nice all girls weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So on Friday before y'all left, we had an early dinner.
Yes.
Very early dinner.
It was a dinner that early enough to be confusing to several of the children. Why are we eating now? It was like 4:30 or 5, which is really early for us.
Yeah. So then we had lots of time after dinner. So we decided to have a girls' movie night. So we made popcorn and we watched West Side Story, the new Steven Spielberg West Side Story, which...
You should probably watch the old one now that they've seen the new one. That would be interesting.
I have to say, like, halfway through, I'm like, this is super intense. And I was feeling a little uncomfortable with, like, my movie choice.
Like, it might have been inappropriate for...
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Was it just Bella and Sophie, or was it all three?
No, it was all three. Oh. If I had pre-watched it, I would probably have decided not to watch it. They all enjoyed it.
Uh-huh.
And did not seem to be too traumatized by it. But it was a lot more like it felt grittier than I remember the original being.
Well, 1950s, you know, musicals were not all that gritty.
Exactly. There was a lot more implications of inappropriate relationships between the characters, too.
That was in the original.
Was it? Okay, I did not remember that.
Again, 1950s version, but there were implications.
There was a very strong implication that Nita and Bernardo were living together.
Okay.
And very clearly not married.
Right.
And Maria and Tony, of course, then they made their vows at the Cloisters.
The New York
Museum.
Yeah.
Like kneeling in front of a, you know, an altar in the Cloisters.
Interesting.
And then proceeded to act like they were married.
Ew. So pseudo marriage.
There was nothing really graphic, but they do wake up in bed the next morning together. And I'm thinking, eee.
Don't ask me why. Don't ask me questions. Don't ask me questions.
Right. and then the fight was very much more violent than I remember.
Less stylized.
A little bit less stylized. I mean, there were a lot of the dance numbers were very stylized and the fight was kind of stylized. I mean, there were a lot of homages to the original stage play.
Did any of the sharks go flying through the air, like in a pinwheel sort of maneuver by one of the jets? Because that was my maneuver.
I don't remember.
I was in the high school, a high school production of West Side Story, where I was a shark, and my buddy and I choreographed a maneuver in the fight scene where he flung me through the air, and my mom's like, "That's my son flipping through the air," is in the audience.
Anyway,
I digress.
Yes. It was really good. It was a very good production. A lot of my friends had raved about it, and I was glad we watched it. But if I'd previewed it, I'm not sure we would have.
Okay.
Just put it that way. The two older girls seemed to really enjoy it a lot.
Good.
And Bella, I think, downloaded the soundtrack and was listening to it.
No, 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 no. Don't want to do too much of that.
Yeah. so that was good. And then Saturday, we cleaned the girls' room. We unpacked three gigantic boxes of stuff and, like, sorted it, you know, throw this away and keep this. And we reduced them down to one small box of stuff that we didn't really have place for it, but we just kind of shoved it back into the closet. And then they vacuumed and tidied and everything. And that was a pretty big accomplishment.
Mm.
So then Saturday night we watched Macbeth.
The Tragedy of Macbeth.
The Joel Cohen directed, starring Frances McDormand and Denzel Washington?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
On Apple TV Plus.
On Apple TV. It was gorgeous. Yeah. Absolutely. The cinematography was just brilliant. It's shot in black and white, which Sophie said was just the perfect choice because it felt kind of dreamlike, but also grittier and more real, but also very stylized. Like the shots were just so beautiful.
Every shot was like a painting.
Yeah.
And when you constrain the art to certain parameters, and in this case to black and white, it really, it focuses the attention of the artist.
And I have to say, there are a lot of really gorgeous stylistic choices made. The witches, it was kind of hard to tell if there was one person or three, which was kind of cool, were incredibly creepy. Like, when you first see the witch, she's contorted into this, like, really bizarre, like, you know, acrobat with, like, leg behind the head sort of contortion where you can't really tell where all the limbs are coming from.
Weird.
It was really weird and creepy, and it was kind of like one person talking to herself doing voices. But then later when she meets Macbeth and Banquo, you see the one figure, the witch, standing right at the edge of a pool, but there's two reflections in the pool, neither one immediately in front of her.
Ew, weird.
And then, like, the two eventually come up out of the pool, and so then there's three figures standing there. So it was really super creepy and cool.
Wow.
There's also repeated use of crows and mist, and it was just, it was gorgeous.
Hmm.
I really loved the way they did the "Is this a dagger I see before me?" scene, where he's standing at the end of this very long colonnade, and he sees at the very end, against a dark doorway, this shining silver dagger. And the whole speech, he's moving slowly down the colonnade. And then he finally, at the end of the speech, gets there. And you see that the dagger was actually the door pull.
Huh.
Which is kind of dagger shaped. And so this whole speech, like, he was seeing it, but it was there, but it was also in his mind, had become, you know, the dagger of the mind. Oh, it was a brilliant interpretation and a way to do it without having, like, the, you know, hokey, like, shiny daggers floating in the air.
Yeah.
So many good things about it. The girls loved it and, were a little bit creeped out by the end.
<You'd think. laughs>
Sophie quips, "Macbeth hath murdered sleep." So that was fun. The girls really enjoyed it. And then, of course, we lost sleep on Saturday.
Oh, yes. Night, that was the other part of the camping. You always wake up tired after, like, the Sunday morning of a camping trip with scouts. And this was no exception. And on top of it, I'd lost an hour of sleep because of the clock change.
Yeah. This camping trip on daylight, spring forward weekend, is a bad idea.
Not good planning on behalf of the scout troop. Oh, so anyway, and then today, by the time we got back before you guys left for Mass, but we were just too wiped to go to Mass. Like, I hadn't taken a shower yet and all that. So you took the girls.
Yep, we went to Mass.
And then I went to the late Mass, the last chance Mass, as they call it, over at St. Clair's. And yeah, I was there. Don't remember a lot. Oh man, I am here and doing the best I can. Man, I'm tired. So all right, you've talked a little bit about stuff we've watched or you've watched, but let's talk about the food and then we'll get back to other things we've watched and read.
Okay.
So this week we made a few things, new things. A couple of soups. One was a pork and tofu soup, and let me pull that up here.
That was the one that you liked and everybody else thought was too strong tasting.
Yeah, so I'm probably so it's a pork and tofu soup with miso and cabbage. It's an Instant Pot recipe. That's one of the things, that's what I think kind of drew me in, but it's a Japanese Instant Pot recipe. There was too much miso in the recipe, so I doubled it.
Way too much miso.
So like with the most recipes, I have to double it to feed the whole family, and it went from a half a cup to a whole cup of miso.
I think a half cup would have been too much.
A half cup with the doubled recipe would have been?
Yeah, even that would have been. That's just a lot of miso. I don't know.
I guess. So the way it works is you're supposed to saute the miso, garlic, ginger, and oil in the Instant Pot. And then you add in the, you know, until it browns. Like you're basically kind of making a roux out of it, which is kind of interesting. I don't think it's for thickening. I think it's the browning is that what you want. Then you add sake and water, scrape up the brown bits, add pork. It wanted you to do pork, boneless pork shoulder, but had pork chops. And they worked fine. They were nice and tender.
Yeah, the meat was the texture of the meat was fine, mm-hmm. and I liked the pork and the cabbage. It was just too salty, and it was kind of a sour taste to it. It really felt like it wanted something brighter and sweeter to counterbalance the miso.
Right. It needed something.
I think I would have added onions for one.
Right.
They would have added some sweetness and maybe like some rice vinegar or something to.
Some seasoned rice vinegar, which is sweeter.
Right. Right. Because the sourness was like not like a bright sour, like a lemon or a vinegar. It was kind of a dull sour taste. Like just like the miso was kind of sour.
Yeah.
It needed something else.
So, yeah, I just added that to the recipe, by the way, to add the seasoned rice vinegar. So, because we only have a 6-quart Instant Pot, doubling it wouldn't fit if for the whole recipe. But the nice thing about this recipe is once you add the pork and then some white pepper, that's when you pressure cook it. So it doesn't have all the other ingredients in it at that point. So what I did was I pressure cooked it. Then when it was done, I moved it all to my Dutch oven on top of the stove, and that's where I add the cabbage and the tofu and then let it cook from there, like finish cooking on the stovetop, and then you add soy sauce and some other stuff to it to you know, and then a little sesame oil. I ate up all the leftovers. I really liked it, so. But I like salty stuff, so maybe that's just me.
It was just way too much for everybody else. It felt like it had potential as a recipe. Like,
I think you're right. It should have the shiitake mushrooms.
The theory was good, but it needed some other flavors to balance out.
Yep. So next time, if I make it again, we'll add the shiitake mushrooms and the onions, less miso, and add some seasoned rice vinegar, maybe toward the end, or... Should I do it before during the pressure?
I would do it at the end.
Yeah, at the end. So that was one, and it was pretty good. And it was quick. It's a relatively quick recipe. It doesn't have to, because it uses the pressure cooker. So the other one I made was another recipe for a curried chicken soup with coconut and kale. This was a
knock it out of the park recipe. I loved it.
Yes.
The kids were not as thrilled, especially with the amount of kale.
Yes. So I would use, again, another doubled recipe, but I would still use, it called for a whole pound of kale. I think half as much kale would have been fine.
I mean, I was fine with the amount of kale. It was like salad in a soup, but I love kale salad.
Yeah.
But for the kid's sake, I would definitely do less kale.
So this one has onion, red bell pepper, grated fresh ginger, curry powder. The kale, boneless, skinless chicken thighs, and coconut milk and lime juice and water. So we added carrots and mushrooms to that as well.
Yeah. Not nearly enough vegetables in the original.
Yeah. And the carrots were the big thing. The mushrooms, like in a soup like this, quartered mushrooms instead of sliced, I think is better. Like if you're sauteing or pan frying, sliced mushrooms. But in a soup or a stew or a curry, I like quartered better, I think, or chunkier at least.
Right.
Or, you know, diced or chopped, but not sliced as much. But in any case, the coconut milk and the curry, I mean, it's a classic curry, but it's thin enough that it's not a curry. It's a soup. It's a curried soup. It's right. I think the kids were kind of saying it's really just a curry, isn't it? It's the flavors. Yeah, it's a thin curry, I guess, is what they were saying.
I love the combination of coconut milk and lime. It's one of my favorite flavors.
And because of that lime, use the Taijin, which is that limey pepper sprinkle that you can put on at the table, was really a good addition to it. But
unfortunately, Bella is not a huge fan of coconut milk.
Yeah. There's always one of them in the family who's just not enjoying one of the recipes. And then tonight we had a jambalaya, which was the original was a chicken and shrimp jambalaya, but we decided to just kind of go with it's called chicken and shrimp jambalaya, but it has sausage in it because jambalaya has sausage in it by definition. I guess. And we decided to omit the chicken and just do the shrimp and the sausage.
It already, very few of the kids ate it, and it had tons of leftovers. If we'd added chicken, it would have been way too much.
Yeah, yeah, it would have been. In fact, I probably would have had to scale it back down to the half, to the regular recipe instead of the double. But, you know, it's jambalaya, so it's got the Cajun Holy Trinity of onion, celery, and bell pepper, red bell pepper in this case.
Honestly, I wouldn't have doubled it. I would have just done a single recipe.
I probably should have, yeah.
Basically, Sophie, you, and I ate it. Anthony ate a little bit. Bella and Lucy both tried it, and Ben was like, not even going there.
So one of the interesting things that the recipe had you do was put all the vegetables, so the onion, celery, bell pepper, and garlic in a food processor and chop it till it's fine.
I honestly kind of prefer chunks in my jambalaya, so I would skip that and just dice them.
I think so too. I think it's trying to save time.
Probably.
It's kind of a sofrito thing. They kind of fry it in the... So the original recipe with the chicken has you cook the chicken with skin down in the bottom of the Dutch oven. So you're rendering out the chicken fat. Then you're cooking the sausage. I didn't have andouille. I used chorizo that I picked up at the meat market I talked about last time. And so you're basically frying that in the fats, the meat fats that you've already rendered out, which is not a bad idea. But I don't know. I agree. I think I would rather just have it as a little chunkier, some more textures in the yeah. food. Then you add in, once that's cooked, you add in the rice and salt and thyme and cayenne, although we just use Cajun seasoning instead of straight cayenne because the kids don't like the spice. And
then we could, those of us who like spicier food, just added more spice. Although, honestly, we probably could have just made it spicy since nobody ate it anyway.
I know. But you kind of cook the rice in the fat, which is a nice thing. Like pre-cooking rice in a fat before cooking it in the liquid really adds some nice flavors to it.
Yeah, and a better like a creamier texture.
Yes. So once that's done, then you add tomatoes, some of the reserved tomato juice. So it's a can of diced tomatoes, and you save some of the liquid. So you add some of the liquid in. It calls for clam juice. I didn't have any jarred clam juice, but what I did have, because I always think ahead, when I made last time I made lobsters, I boiled down the water that the lobsters cooked in into really boil it down. And then save it in the freezer. So I had some of that in the freezer that luckily you remembered. Added lobster stock.
I stumbled across it in the freezer the other day.
Yeah. So I added the lobster stock and some chicken broth and then put the sausage in. And then you basically just like cook, stir. And then when it's almost done, you throw shrimp on top, which I had a bag of shrimp that I bought on sale ages ago. It was almost freezer burned. In fact, I think it was freezer burned, but it was fine. Threw that on top and cooked that on there. And that was it. I had to wait till I got back from Mass to enjoy it. But you guys had some before I got back. But it was the shrimp, not the shrimp, the rice felt a little gummier than I expected it to be. Is that the way it's supposed to be? Like kind of thick and I don't know. It just felt, it wasn't as like individual grains. It was very starchy, gummier.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's...
I didn't notice anything. It tasted like I expected.
Well, no, it tasted. I was just thinking more like texture. The taste was good. But maybe that's how jambalaya is supposed to be. So let me know. So those are three things we made this week. I've been forgetting to do it, and I apologize. But I will put links to where the recipes are from. I think these are all Cook's Illustrated America's Test Kitchen recipes, frankly. I know that the curry chicken soup was Cook's Country, the jambalaya was Cook's Illustrated, and I'm guessing the pork and tofu soup with cabbage was either Milk Street or Cook's Illustrated. But, I mean, by now you know where I get most of my recipes from. It's one of those three a lot of the time. So, all right. So that's what we've been cooking. So let's talk about other things that we watched and some stuff we've read that we've finished. We watched Black Panther today as a family.
So good.
Moving forward in the MCU. Very good. So I have to admit, this is one of the things I was telling one of the guys last night. when I first watched Black Panther, I really disliked Michael B. Jordan as Eric Killmonger. I thought he was over the top. I thought he was just playing it way too.
Really?
Yes.
I did not get over the top from that.
Well, no. So to clarify, on my second watch through, completely different. I thought it was great. I don't know why I got this impression the first time I watched it, but I really disliked that character. I don't know what it was, but there was something about it. Maybe as I was watching, I had different expectations of who he was and what he was going to be doing. Although it might be at one point they're describing his background. He graduated from Annapolis at 19. I'm sorry. That's not how the world works. You could go to Harvard or MIT at 15 years old or something because you're a child prodigy. The United States Navy is not taking you into their school for training future officers at 15. You don't graduate from Annapolis at 19. No one gets let into Annapolis until you are 18 years old, period. It's annoying. Just have him. Why are you making him like he graduated at 19? It's just there's certain MCU things they do that are just dumb.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it
stuck in my craw.
Okay.
Well, that and the whole like, oh, he has this super, you know, resume as a Navy SEAL thing and like, whatever.
Was that just dragged in from the comics, I'm guessing?
It probably was. Well, the thing is, like in the What If series, the animated MCU Marvel What If, it was even worse. Like the whole, like his, the whole shtick that, you know, he's the CEO of Stark Industries now, but he's still a U.S. Navy lieutenant. Like, you can't do that. It's just, it was annoying. Anyway.
I wondered because I think that he maybe has a a bigger presence in the comics and they bring him in for one movie and kill him off. So maybe they were trying to like make up for.
Maybe. I don't know. That's my lack of knowledge of the comics. I don't really know. Now, I had some people were saying that they were hoping he would be the next Black Panther, that they wish they hadn't killed him off. It would be interesting to see him have to step into the role of hero, having just been the villain, given the sorts of things he was talking about, you know, liberating from oppression and slavery.
Yeah, I kind of felt like killing him off was a little bit of a cop out narratively, because it would have been interesting to see T'Challa try to create a relationship with this cousin who he didn't grow up with. I mean, he's so mad at his father for screwing up his cousin, and he's kind of in agreement with him about, like, by the end of the movie at least, about Wakanda not being isolationist anymore.
It's just he disagrees with the means.
Right, he accepts the point. And I felt like the two of them working together could have done something beautiful. I guess I kind of understood Killmonger's, like, what, you're going to put me in prison, therefore kill me. And I think that T'Challa should have ignored that, saved him, and worked on rehabilitating him instead of letting him die. That I thought was a kind of weak.
Yeah.
If the movie had any weaknesses, that was the weak moment when he should have saved him.
So one of the, as everyone knows, Chadwick Boseman, the actor who plays T'Challa, died in real life. He died of cancer. And there was actually one point where he's talking about death that really kind of struck me. Like, did he have cancer at that point? I think he might have already when they were filming
It's possible because he didn't talk, let anyone know that he had cancer. So yeah. I'm not sure what the timeline of him being sick was, but he could have known.
Right.
Although I don't know.
Well, in any case, it's always moving to me to watch this because he's so good in it. He's
so very good.
I mean, it's really a really great movie in how it portrays a sensitive subject, but it does it so well. So as not, it doesn't offend. It doesn't make, you know, when they call Martin Freeman colonizer, you know, it just doesn't come across as obnoxious. It's just the word that they use, partly because I think they have the power. Like, they're not oppressed and downtrodden. They're the most sophisticated nation in the world. I don't know. It's kind of interesting. One thing I pointed out, which was funny, is that Martin Freeman, who played Bilbo in The Hobbit, was in a scene with Andy Serkis, who played Gollum in The Hobbit. So Gollum and Bilbo were having a negotiation for this invaluable prize in the casino. I just thought that was kind of funny to think about. Now we just need Martin Freeman's character to show up in Doctor Strange, and you can have Smaug and Bilbo and Watson and Holmes on screen at the same time.
Right. We haven't seen that character since, the Martin Freeman CIA guy.
No, he's only done the two. He was in The Winter Soldier, and then he was in this. My guess is he'll be in the Black Panther 2.
I don't remember him in Winter Soldier.
When they brought in Baron, what's his face? The guy who actually set off the bomb.
Right.
Actually, when they brought in Bucky, too, into that facility. He was the guy in the facility.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
So, what did the kids think of? I think the kids enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. They liked it a lot.
The boys were tired, so they didn't talk much.
The boys
about
were
it.
Very tired. The girls were enthusiastic, but they usually go like enthused in their room.
Yes. They liked, I think they liked Suri. I think they were really
absolutely love Suri.
Yeah. She's cool. And she's definitely in the next movie. I remember hearing about that. In fact, I think she got injured in filming it. They filmed part of it at MIT, you know.
Cool.
Yeah. So, since she was in those scenes. So it was really cool.
I expect that we'll be seeing some Black Panther fan art soon.
Yes.
Bella already did actually West Side Story fan art.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she drew a picture of Maria.
Oh, fun.
Which was actually a pretty good little sketch yesterday.
All right, so I finished a book, finally. So slow. I need to pick up the pace, which means I probably should stop paging through Twitter, which is taking up more time than it should. But I finished the latest Star Wars High Republic book called Fallen Star. And I've said before, like, I find the premise interesting. It's a prequel. It takes place 150 years before the events of the movie prequels.
Mm-hmm.
So at when the Jedi Order was at its peak, at its height of its powers and of its size and respectability and purpose and vision and all that sort of stuff. Whereas what we see in the prequels, the movie prequels, is the Jedi Order at its decline.
Right.
You know, it's blind to the presence of the Sith, etc. So it's hard to, with a story like this, it's hard to do anything that's like, there's an enemy that's trying to destroy the Jedi Order. And you're like, well, I know that they don't succeed because A, they're the bad guy, but also B, the Jedi Order is still around in the movie prequel era. On the other hand, because we have all these characters, like apart from, say, Yoda, who we know is 900 years old when he dies, all of these characters are dead by the time of the movies. So none of these characters have to live through the books. And in fact, there's a pretty high body count in these books of major characters, characters that you grow to really enjoy, really to like, who get a lot of page time. You know, in the sense of they get a lot of lines, a lot of presence in the books, and they kill them off. And from a dramatic standpoint, not that I enjoy characters dying, but it's dramatically satisfying because it has an impact. There's a cost to all these things. A lot of times these books, like they kind of go by the numbers, and the good guy, your hero, encounters the enemy. The enemy gets the upper hand. There's an implication that the good guy is going to lose. But of course, you know, the good guy is not going to lose because he's the hero of all the series of books. And the series of books is not going to end at this point. And then eventually he overcomes. And what's interesting is how he overcomes the enemy.
Right.
But in this case, they don't necessarily overcome the enemy. the enemy wins and some of the characters that you like die. And so it's an interesting series. This one is one I think the kids could read. The last one that had some adult situations where one of the Jedi breaks his vow of celibacy. So that one was the one we put the kibosh on for the, at least for the younger kids. But this one they could read. There's nothing in it that is objectionable like that.
But do you think it's too hard to, for them to like go in and out of a series, like reading some and not others?
I think Anthony could jump in. There's stuff that happens in the last one, like characters who die. I don't know.
See, I just, my tendency is to just say, if you can't read one book in the series, then you don't read the series until you're old enough to.
They really want to read the book. Like, it's Star Wars books. It's the Star Wars books that are available. And the thing is, there are junior reader books that are part of the whole High Republic stuff that can be read outside the main series.
Uh-huh.
So they could read those, and they sort of stand alone. So there would be that. So you had a book that you finished?
Right. I picked up this book. Somebody on Facebook, I don't remember who, recommended it. It was called The Exiles by Hillary McKay. And it was the first in a series. And I thought, well, it sounded like it might be good. It was a series about four sisters who go to stay with their grandmother for summer vacation. And I love books about sibling groups, like especially bigger families. But this one, the Dust Jacket said it was the author's first novel, and it kind of felt like, I suspect she was pretty young when she wrote it, and she was relying on memories perhaps of her own siblings rather than being a parent. The sisters are all kind of unpleasant, and the parents are really unpleasant. The grandmother is really the only super sympathetic character. The sisters are all kind of like dumb, like deliberately foolish.
Uh-huh.
And it was a very weird authorial choice to make your protagonists not terribly likable. Like basically the basic plot line is they're all like bookworms. Like they don't want to do anything at all except read, and they're kind of lazy about everything except books. And the parents come into some money that the dad inherits from some like step grandfather or something that they didn't expect. And so the parents decide to spend the money on a house renovation, which the girls, when they first hear about the money, they all assume that they're going to get a share of it to spend however they want. And then they're shocked and appalled that the parents are selfishly using all of the money on the house. And the parents keep saying, but we all enjoy the house. And the girls are like, but why are you keeping all the money for yourself? Why don't we get to have any of it to do?
Because you're children?
Right.
why do you think you have a right to it?
But I kind of felt like the parents were sort of foolish in the way they talked to the kids. And they didn't really do a good job of explaining things and setting expectations.
Is this the author intentionally dumbing down the characters in order to create drama?
I kind of felt like it might have been, or she just didn't quite know what to do with the characters. Anyway, so they decide to go stay with their grandmother. Evidently, they've never visited her house before. She's only visited them, which was a kind of a weird thing that it was never really explained, like why they'd never visited their grandmother. The oldest is like 12 or 13. Anyway, the grandmother's evidently a huge bookworm, but she thinks that the girls need to spend less time reading and more time like engaged in the world and learning things about the world and learning how to do chores and be commonsensical. So she takes all the books in the house and hides them except for her cookbooks and one, like some volumes of Shakespeare. And so the girls are kind of forced to go on adventures with the grandmother, which I kind of liked the adventures that she takes them on. Like, she's actually kind of a cool grandmother. But then the book ended with the girls found the day before they left, they found the stash of books that she'd hidden in the room above the garage. And they snuck in there in the middle of the night with candles to read the books. and they accidentally left a candle there and they burned like their grandmother's whole book collection, which was like this big treasure trove of a book collection. And they end up saving the grandma's life by pulling her out of the smoke. They burned up the books.
That's kind of horrifying.
It was kind of a horrifying ending, and I was not sure what to make of it. It just kind of felt like, what are you trying to do here? So I'm probably not going to go find the rest of the books in the series. I don't
think our kids would enjoy this book.
It doesn't sound like I don't think they would enjoy it at all. Bella kind of picks it up and flipped through it, and she's like, no, these characters are annoying, and I think she flipped to the end and saw the thing about the book fire and was just like, nope, nope, not doing that.
Yes, exiles hath killed sleep. the idea of burning all the books.
It had potential. She just didn't quite know what to do with her characters, I think.
Mm.
I'm also reading The Power and the Glory, and that is turning out to be a really good book. I should have known because, well, everyone says that it's a really good book, but I have a tendency sometimes to be skeptical about books that everyone says are so good because, well.
Dig in your heels. Yeah.
If it's popular, it must not be good. I still have that little bit of a prejudice. And so.
Yes. The iconoclast, the teenage iconoclast.
Right.
Oh, I don't like that music. Everyone else does.
Yeah. I also watched a show that a friend of mine had suggested, which is on Amazon Prime. It's a made for Amazon Prime, which is called As We See It, and totally weird. It's a show that will appeal to some people, but not to others. It's about three autistic adults living together in an apartment and their social skills aide who's trying to help them to live in the world. And the portrayals of the characters were really good. I fell in love with all of the characters. But it's a show with lots of bad language and adult situations. And it's kind of an interesting exploration of like characters who don't have any moral or religious foundation trying to flail around in the world. I mean, I loved the characters. And like every episode had me crying.
Oh, wow.
Some really beautiful, evidently all three actors who play the three autistic leads are themselves autistic. And it was really a show. I felt like the As We See It of the title was not only about like trying to show the world from the autistic point of view, but also kind of showing it from the family and friends and caretakers point of view, too. Like the life skills aide who helps them is one of the main characters too, and like her relationships are kind of just as important. And I really liked that it kind of showed us all the points of view.
Okay.
Anyway,
good.
If you don't mind lots of adult situations and language, it's a really good show, but it was definitely not one that is going to be for everybody's taste. Mm. If you're sensitive to those sorts of things, skip it.
Okay. So let's wrap things up by talking about this week's gospel and readings and homily, and I'm going to leave that mostly to you because I've mostly tuned it out. The mass I went to, the priest had a strong accent, and I was very tired, and I don't recall anything. I do want to note that in the Archdiocese of Boston, every year, the Transfiguration Sunday is the weekend that they launch the Catholic Appeal. Which means that every time we get the Gospel of the Transfiguration, it's curtailed because they also have to tell us all about how to fill out the cards to give the Catholic
Appeal. I did not find that our Mass was curtailed. Our pastor did not curtail his homily.
That's good.
At all. He gave an incredibly a good homily. So the Transfiguration, he kind of took the focus of talking about how there's a temptation for Christians and Catholics to emphasize social justice. And he says, it's a good thing to donate our time and our money. It's crucial. We owe it. We have a moral obligation to work for bettering this world. But, and it's a big but, our main preoccupation is not this world. Our main preoccupation is the next world. and our goal should be heaven, and we're made to see God face to face.
Mm-hmm.
And we're made to be vessels of his grace. So then he approached the transfiguration sort of from that angle, like thinking about our eternal destination of heaven, and then says, so what the transfiguration is about us having a preview almost of what that's like. Jesus in his glorified body. He's still himself, but he's unrecognizable, but he's recognizable at the same time. Sort of like he talked about, like when you see a caterpillar, you can't recognize the butterfly that it's going to be. Or when you hold an acorn, you can't see in it the oak tree.
Okay.
So we are made for eternal glory and to have a glorified body like Jesus. So he talked about like what, thinking about what heaven will be like in this great mystery, but that Christ shows us something about it. Like, it's a mystery, but we also have, it's not completely unknowable.
Mm-hmm.
So then he talked about, like, what is our glorified body going to be like? It's going to be, like, this quality. And he talked about four aspects of it. The first one was quality. Like, we will have quality bodies. Our bodies will not fail us. We will not
mm-hmm.
have illness, ailment, the no decay, no change. Just, like, a perfect, unchanging body.
Okay.
And then he talked about agility. Our body will answer to our will perfectly. And we will be able to control everything, including like how we approach the laws of physics. So Jesus is able to walk through walls and eat fish.
We'll be able to have Jedi powers and fly.
Yeah. Like we can do whatever we want to because our bodies will be completely under our control.
Okay.
I liked that. And then luminosity. We'll have like beautiful, glowing, pure light, bodies of light.
When we say, oh, she's glowing, we'll all be glowing.
Right. He says, you know, like, it's like when you look out a window and you think, oh, that's beautiful. All the light's coming through. And then you get closer and you see that it's all smudged and dirty. And like, imagine being able to wash it so it's perfectly transparent and all of the light comes through. Just that perfect.
Mm.
Clarity. Oh, I love that image. And then identity. Like we will not lose ourselves, but we will be more fully ourselves. We'll be recognizable to each other. So when we see each other in heaven, we will know each other. We'll recognize each other. And he talked about like, it's not like some ideas of heaven, especially in Eastern spirituality, where we become like a drop melting into the great ocean and we lose ourselves. That's not what we believe. We believe that we are becoming more ourselves, more perfectly ourselves. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to lose myself. I don't want to lose the other people, but to know that we will be more who we are supposed to be. So I really liked the fact that he talked about how looking forward to heaven can give us strength for the battles of daily life. And he quoted from the Shawshank Redemption. He says that at the very end, the character, Morgan Freeman's character, I think it is, says, I want to see my friend again and shake his hand. And that longing for the people who we are separated from and wanting mm-hmm. to see them again. So it's not a silly or pious thought to long for the people who are separated from us. It's this is the reality that we were made for. We're made to see each other again and to be in communion with each other. And that our longing for the people who are gone should spur us on to strive for that, to make that our goal. So that we're not just philanthropists making this world better, but we're also improving this world because that's our calling, but we're also striving for our citizenship in heaven.
Okay.
I love talking about thinking about heaven and heavenly realities. It
cool.
Excites me.
Actually, that's a really good homily. I'm glad you described it to me because that's much more than I got out of the mess I went to.
I have started taking notes on my phone and they're a little bit indecipherable because I can't really see my phone very well when I'm typing on it without my reading glasses. And I don't take those to church, but I'm kind of tapping away on my phone and then trying to decipher it afterwards.
Yes.
I think I get the gist of it.
If you see someone tapping away on their phone at church, don't assume that they're texting or something. Or
I often actually follow along on the mass readings because I can't see the missal anymore. My eyes are just too bad. And I've got an optometrist appointment. I do. But I don't have transitional bifocal glasses, whatever.
Progressive lenses.
Progressive. That's what I'm looking for. Yeah. I don't have progressive lenses. So I wear my long distance glasses so I can see the priest on the altar. And so I can, you know, see to drive to church and stuff. But I can't see the little print. So I use my phone to look at the readings in big type.
Mm-hmm.
I know my dad does the same. My dad takes actually his iPad mini to church with him and uses the gigantic size font to read. So yeah, sometimes people who have devices in church might actually be using them to pray.
Yeah. All right, let's finish things off. I am fading fast, okay. So I want us to be able to finish and not nod off before the end of our broadcast. So let's take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Salvatore P., Elisha R., Nash C., Jimmy C., and Ernie M. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So that's it from us. We'll find links from our discussion in our show notes at sqpn.com/bets. That's BETTS. Send us your feedback at the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, or send an email to bets@sqpn.com. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.